Welcome back to the Gray Lodge. I am Isaac Weishaupt, host of Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. This is our Gray Lodge series where we analyze Twin Peaks. And today we're moving on. Season 1, Episode 3, a.k.a. Episode 4. Oh, I get so confused with the numbering, so I like to keep it with season and episode. So this is Season 1, Episode 3, Rest in Pain. All right. The infamous Laura Palmer funeral episode. Directed by Tina Rathborn, written by Harley Payton. All right. Now, when this episode starts out, Audrey, she's waiting for Colonel Cooper. He corrects her. Special Agent Cooper. To show up for breakfast at the Great Northern. They're being very flirtatious, and the music suggests so. He asks her about a note someone had slipped under his door that just says One-Eyed Jax. She confirms that this is it's a whorehouse. It's a whore home up north at the Canadian border. And she is beginning to try to help Laura here. She wants to sort of take on Del Cooper as a father figure, a love interest, a kind of combination of the two. Because she wants to help solve this murder. She says, look, you know, men go up there to pick up girls. And I love this scene right here. There's another classic. You know, these first few episodes are just jam-packed with classic scenes. So I'm going to play the clip of Special Agent Dale Cooper order. he's ordering brekkie. All right, take a listen.
I'm going to have to ask you to leave now. Police business.
Thank you for talking to me.
Trudy, two more coffees, please. Harry, Lucy, it is an absolutely beautiful morning. Short stack of griddle cakes, melted butter, maple syrup, lightly heated, slice of ham. Nothing beats the taste sensation when maple syrup collides with ham.
Griddle cake, slice of ham.
Who killed Laura Palmer?
Harry, let me tell you about the dream I had last night.
Tibet.
No. You were there. Lucy, so were you. Harry, my dream is a code waiting to be broken. Break the code, solve the crime.
Break the code. Crime.
In my dream, Sarah Palmer has a vision of her daughter's killer. Deputy Hawk sketched his picture. I got a phone call from a one-armed man named Mike. The killer's name was Bob.
Mike and Bobby?
No, it's a different Mike and a different Bob. They lived above a convenience store. They had a tattoo. Fire. Walk with me. Mike couldn't stand the killing anymore, so he cut off his arm. Bob vowed to kill again, so Mike shot him. Do you know where dreams come from?
Not specifically.
Acetylcholine neurons fire high-voltage impulses into the forebrain. These impulses become pictures. The pictures become dreams. But no one knows why we choose these particular pictures.
So what was the end of this dream?
Suddenly, it was 25 years later. I was old, sitting in a red room. There was a midget in a red suit and a beautiful woman. The little man told me that my favorite gum was coming back into style, and didn't his cousin look exactly like Laura Palmer, which she did.
What cousin?
The beautiful woman. She's filled with secrets. Sometimes her arms bend back. Where she's from, the birds sing a pretty song, and there's always music in the air. The midget did a dance, Laura kissed me, and she whispered the name of the killer in my ear.
Who was it?
I don't remember.
Damn.
Damn.
Harry, our job is simple. Break the code, solve the crime.
Who doesn't love that? Nothing beats the taste sensation when maple syrup collides with the ham. Well, then they get into their conversation. They get down to business, right? Truman asks who killed Laura Palmer. And Cooper responds by talking about his dream. He says, look, Truman, you were there. Lucy was there. They weren't, but whatever. He says, break the code, solve the crime. And then they address how the people in his dream were Mike and Bob, but not Mike and Bobby, not Snake and Bobby, right? It's very confusing, isn't it? Especially when you just start out Twin Peaks, all these characters are very confusing. So you've got the mysterious Mike and the mysterious Bob. They live above a convenience store, which some of these things don't really pay a big role until season 3. All right. But then he gives a speech about how dreams are created, because this whole Twin Peaks show is about this weird overlapping realm of the dream world to reality. He talks about in the dream how it was 25 years later. He talks about the, you know, the part from the last episode with the waiting room scene. He said, this is where the birds sing a pretty song. All right. Now put this in your back pocket. Your back pockets are getting stuffed by now. This is going to be more relevant, but you got to wait until the very end of season 3, I think. This is one of the theories I'm floating out there. And I don't want to give anything away, but I feel like the birds singing a pretty song plays a role. There's all these birds in Twin Peaks. Now, fun fact, that whole scene was not scripted. The waiting room scene. I'm going to read you from the Lynch on Lynch bio. He said, I was leaning against a car. The front of me was leaning against this very warm car. My hands were on the roof and the metal was very hot. The red room scene leapt into my mind. Little Mike was there and he was speaking backwards. For the rest of the night, I thought only about the red room. And then in the other Lynch bio, Room to Dream, he recalls the story and says how the whole thing entered his mind. The whole thing about how it was shot backwards with Cooper 25 years in the future. Now, this footage of the Red Room that Cooper's referencing was actually the ending to the pilot in case it ended up being released as a film. Remember we talked about that? Obviously, the show ended up getting picked up, so Lynch ended up using it for the, you know, this part of the season. Moving on. Albert is trying to do the autopsy of Laura Palmer, but Dr. Haywood, he doesn't want him to cut her open. You know, everyone's sentimentally connected to Laura Palmer in this town. And Albert tells them to return to their porches and resume whittling. Peak Albert heel moments here. Great dialogue. Truman, he's had enough. He socks Albert in the mouth. And Cooper breaks it up, and he actually orders Albert to release the body. Okay? A little riff. But Cooper, he's that Sigma male. Of course he's going to win that battle, too. Moving on to the Palmer house, we get glimpses of the Invitation to Love soap opera playing on the TV, as you see often in season 1. Leland's getting all doped up because they're trying to cope with the loss, right? It's really painful. And this woman shows up, and you're watching it, and you're like, wait a minute, that's Laura Palmer with a brunette wig and glasses. Well, it turns out it's not. It turns out it's Madeline, who is Laura's cousin. So it's Uncle Leland, and, you know, she makes her appearance. Don't be confused. That's not Laura Palmer. So then we find out that Norma from the Double R Diner, her husband Hank, He's in the clink. He's doing 3 to 5 for manslaughter. All right. Then Cooper and Truman, they go to visit this Leo Johnson guy. You know, he's a wife beater. That's Shelley's husband. And he's out chopping wood, and he's being a real jerk to Cooper and Truman. Cooper's trying to be friendly with him, but he's being sassy. And Cooper promptly calls him out and puts him in his stupid little place. Cooper's flexing on the whole town at this point. Meanwhile, Bobby and his father, Major Briggs, they're verbally getting into a fight. And Bobby, he's getting real mad. He's not afraid to go to this funeral because they're getting ready to go to Laura's funeral, right? And you remember, Bobby was dating Laura. Laura was dating everyone at the same time. Bobby's also dating Shelley, who's married to Leo Johnson. Tangled web. And Bobby, you know, Major Briggs is trying to console his son, Bobby. Bobby's like, I'm not scared to go to the funeral. I'm going to turn it upside down. He yells at him. I'm going to turn it upside down. What does that even mean? The funeral? You're going to turn it upside down? Well, you're going to find out. So Cooper and Truman, they're going over the results of this limited autopsy with Albert. And we find out Laura was doing coke. We find out she was bound with twine. Her arms were tied behind her back. Cooper whispers, he says, sometimes my arms bend back, because that was in the dream, in the red room, a.k.a. the waiting room. He thinks maybe this is from the dream, because you see that throughout the show. Is it from the dream? Is there messages being given to Cooper? Some supernatural elements here at play. Meanwhile, Audrey, she's got that secret little passage to snoop on what's going on with her father, Ben Horn. And she's watching, and Dr. Jacoby, he's trying to get Johnny, you know, because Johnny is the one with the problems. He's still wearing the Native American headdress. And the family wants him to take it off because he's about to go to Laura Palmer's funeral. And Dr. Jacoby's trying to coach him through this, right? Then it's time for the funeral. I know, this is a short episode. I told you, some of these episodes of The Grey Lodge, they're going to be shorter. We're getting ready to go to the funeral already. And we get the iconic shot of trees swaying in the wind of Twin Peaks. Another one of these weird subconscious elements, right? Why are we all drawn to these same iconic video images from Twin Peaks? The swaying trees is one of them. The traffic lights is another one of them. All the red room scenes. Meanwhile, all of it, right? Okay, so now we're at the important scene. All the residents of Twin Peaks, they're at Laura Palmer's funeral. Cooper's there. He's sizing everyone up like a good FBI special agent would. And Johnny, he screams, amen. And Bobby, he sticks to his promise. He said he's going to turn the funeral upside down, and that's what he does. He starts ranting about how the whole town knew Laura was in trouble, yet they didn't do anything. He blames the whole town for killing Laura. Then he gets into a fist fight with James. Everybody hates James, so we want to see that happen anyway, all right? Meanwhile, Leland, Laura's father, he's completely checked out of the fighting. He's grieving, and he jumps on the coffin. And it breaks the mechanism and forces it to lower into the grave. And Sarah, his wife, she's yelling at him about ruining the funeral too, you know? Now, what Bobby, his big speech, it's very Charles Manson-like, okay? Blaming society for being fractured and not protecting children anymore, that's all very much Charles Manson talk. And, you know, because Charles Manson, he blames society for not taking care of the poor, and this is what creates disenfranchised youth that feel X'd out of society. That's why they carved X's on their forehead. Later, Charles Manson would make it the swastika, and that's what a lot of people would think. It's the swastika to begin with. It was actually an X, and that's what it meant. But he's saying that you disenfranchise people, and they no longer want to play by society's rules, and then you get murderers. Now, and Dana Ashbrook, who plays Bobby Briggs, you know, he wins the award on this episode, man. He crushed it on this one. Next, everyone meets up at the diner after the funeral, and this is where Shelley is. They're all joking. They're all laughing about Leland jumping on that coffin. And Cooper notices that Big Ed is giving Norma the eyes. He knows that they're having some kind of fling. I mean, everyone's cheating on everyone in Twin Peaks. None of these hoes is loyal. Male and female. There's male hoes too. But yeah, everyone's got a thing, right? Everyone's got a side thing. But anyways, Cooper and Truman and the crew there, Hawk and Big Ed, they're all at the diner. And they're talking about how Jacques Renault, who is the bartender at the Roadhouse, is transporting drugs from Canada into Twin Peaks. Big Ed is not a police officer. But he's like, look, they're messing with the kids. That's a community problem. I'm involved, right? So I'm going to play a clip for you. You're going to hear Truman talk about the history of Twin Peaks and secret societies and evil and all this stuff. Take a listen.
Would you please tell me why you really called me in here?
Cooper, you're going to have to go along with me on this, even if it sounds a little weird.
I'm with you.
Twin Peaks is different. Long way from the world. You've noticed that.
Yes, I have.
That's exactly the way we like it. But there's a back end to that that's kind of different, too. Maybe that's the price we pay for all the good things.
What would that be?
There's a sort of evil out there. Something very, very strange in these old woods. Call it what you want, a darkness, a presence. It takes many forms, but it's been out there for as long as anyone can remember. And we've always been here to fight it.
We?
Men before us, men before them, more after we're gone.
A secret society.
Why don't we take Agent Cooper for a little ride?
Where to?
The bookhouse.
So Twin Peaks is different, all right? We already know this. Truman talks about the evil that exists in the woods. There's a secret society of men who fight the evil. You could argue that this is kind of theosophical ideas of good versus evil. And if you're not good, you're evil. And if you're not evil, you're good kind of thing. But the men in the Bookhouse Boys Secret Society, they do the symbol of touching their temple. Cooper even calls it a secret society. And in the book, The Secret History of Twin Peaks, it goes way back to the beginning of this area of Twin Peaks, before it was settled, when the Native Americans were living there. And you find that the Ghostwood National Forest is actually a place that was very important to a lot of the ancient cultures there. And you'll find out when you get into this show, there's a place called Owl Cave and Glastonbury Grove. And these all have heavy-duty occult ideas behind them. But they're all part of the woods, part of the forest. That's where the evil is. All right? So they take Cooper to the Bookhouse Boys' secret hideout there. And they're interrogating Bernard Renault. Now, he is Jacques' brother. He is also the janitor at the Roadhouse. And they interrogate him at the hideout about the drugs and stuff. Anyways, Leo Johnson and Jacques, they see a red light that indicates that someone's been busted. So they're very well coordinated with this thing. They're good criminals. They're damn fine criminals, all right? Meanwhile, Catherine, she's snooping on a conversation being had with, well, not meanwhile, this is the next scene, I should say. Now Truman is having a conversation with Josie, and Catherine is snooping in on the conversation. And she hears that there's snitching going on about the two ledgers that Catherine has for the sawmill. And Catherine, she hid that second ledger, and she calls out Pete for being shifty with Josie about all of it. But Josie thinks that Catherine and Ben Horn, who are in fact sleeping together, conspired to have Josie's husband, Andrew, killed. All right. Why? Because Ben wants to buy the land on the sawmill. And Josie's like, they might kill me too. They want this land so bad. I've got one more clip. This is the end of the show. We are now at the funeral after party at the hotel lodge. And Cooper has a conversation with Hawk about souls. And Hawk, who is Native American, he knows about this idea of wandering souls. Take a listen.
Do you believe in the soul?
Several.
More than one?
Blackfoot legend. Waking souls that give life to the mind and the body. A dream soul that wanders,
Dream souls. Where do they wander?
Faraway places. The land of the dead.
Is that where Laura is?
Laura's in the ground, Agent Cooper. That's the only thing I'm sure of.
Now, this is the end of the episode, but if you pay attention, he's talking about infusing spirits into bodies. This is very similar to the ideas of what Jack Parsons was trying to do, the homunculus, the golem. Ancient alchemy was talking about this. And today's big tech nerds with the digital transhumanism movement also seek to transfer consciousness digitally. Now, this will play a much larger role in Twin Peaks later on. Mostly in season 3, when everything really gets wild, alright? The dream soul that wanders, indeed. Then the episode wraps up. Leland's on the dance floor crying and begging for someone to dance with him. I recall he was dancing with Laura's photo at his house. So this is, I don't know, him getting in touch with his grieving and his loss of his daughter. So that's the end of the episode, alright? So your homework is to next watch season 1 episode 4, The One-Armed Man. Because we're going to come back and we're going to keep going. We got a lot of episodes to get through. Thank you for your support. Thanks for listening to the show. This has been another episode of The Grey Lodge. Stay woke.